Today is November 13th. Okay, and it's, what's the Hebrew date? Okay. Tezayin Cheshvan. And it's a yahrzeit of Shena.
Bas Yehuda.
Bas Yehuda Ayaleib. Okay, so the shir should be an Ilan Neshama for her. And
Avram ben
Frederick Halevi. And the shir should be an Ilan Neshama for him as well. We're in Micha, Perek Beis, second chapter of Micha. Just 1 second, let me just open this up so we have it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the pasuk says, pasuk Aleph, Hoy Choshvei Oven. Ufale ra amish kavosam. Woe the people who think of sin and think of doing evil on their beds. Bar haboker yasuha. In the morning they do it. Kiyesh la'el yadam, for they have the strength in their hands to do it. So they plot at night, they scheme at night to do an avera, and then when they wake up, they actually do the avera. The nighttime prior to modern times, meaning that prior to the advent of artificial light, the nighttime was a time that people were typically stuck at home. And being stuck at home had advantages in that it was difficult to do anything, including averos. So, typically, there were fewer averos done simply because people didn't have mobility and didn't have access to get to things that would enable averos. That has changed dramatically with artificial light. But the nighttime is a time that really should diminish at least certain types of averos. But what Micha is saying is that the people would plot and scheme at night and then carry out those averos during the day. So that instead of the night being a time that would deter averos, it actually led to more averos. So they used a time that should have been one that would have taken them away from averos to actually bring them closer to averos. The Medrash points out that the Pasuk tells us that they think of the averos, and then in the morning they do them. This is a reference to the Chazal tell us that machshava tova kadosh baruch hu mitzarif lamaisa, that if a person is planning on doing a mitzvah, and then for some reason is unable to carry it out, they get schar for doing the mitzvah anyway. Whereas if a person is planning to do an avera, and for whatever reason is unable to carry it out, then the person does not get punished for the avera. That's why it says over here, they plot and then they carry it out. Without carrying it out, they wouldn't get punished for the avera. It is important to note, though, that it's not as much of a free hand as it seems, because the Gemara tempers this by saying this is only true if it is not a habitual avera. If it is an habitual avera that a person does, then when they're plotting on doing the avera, they do get punished for the plotting of the avera. Hashem does count the machshava to be a maisa, to be action, since it is something they regularly do. Pasuk Beis, v'chamdu sados v'gazalu. So here's the description of the averas that they do. They desire fields and they steal them. Uvatim vinaso, and houses, and they take them as well. Vashku gavru veso, and they take away the financial stability of a man and his household. Viish vinachalaso, and a man and his inheritance. So they scheme for how to get people's money. The Medrash here tells us that we know that one of the, Aseres Hadibros is lo sachmod. Don't desire, don't covet. And another one is, well, there's not, Yeah, Lo Sigzol is not one of the Esrei Sedivos. That's Lo Tignovu. Lo Sigzol is. I'm sorry. Right. So Lo Sigzol, which is not to steal. So the way that the pasuk presents it is that they desire the fields and they steal them. So the Medrash tells us that chemda, desire, leads to gzela, to stealing. That a person has to be careful with coveting, with desire, because it then leads a person to the actual taking of the thing they're not supposed to take. The Gemara Maseches Gittin, in describing the destruction of the Batei Mikdashos, so the Gemara goes through all the terrible calamities that took place in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. This is one of the, perhaps the primary Gemara that is permitted to be studied on Tisha B'Av. Even though one is not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av, one is allowed to read about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and other calamities. And the Gemara Maseches Gittin goes on for several pages about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The very last story related in this discussion is about this pasuk. And it's in Gittin, Nunches Malaf. It's 58a in Maseches Gittin. I'll read you the story as it appears in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, my dechsiv, what does it mean when it says in the pasuk, our pasuk, v'ashku gever ubeso v'ish v'nachaloso. They'll take away the financial stability of a man and his household, and a man and his inheritance. Maisa ba'adam echad, there was a story with a particular man, shenasan einav be'eshes rabo. He put his eyes, which means he desired, the wife of his master. This means he was an apprentice. V'shulya denagri hava, he was an apprentice of a carpenter. And so the carpenter was his master, meaning didn't actually own him, but he was his teacher, he was his mentor. And he was interested in his mentor's wife. So he schemed for how to be able to get her. Pamachas, one time, Hutzrach Lilvos, the carpenter, the master, needed to borrow money. He was short on cash. So he asked his apprentice if he could lend him money. Amarlo, so the apprentice said to him, Shagar ishtecha etzli, send your wife to me, velvena, and I'll lend her the money. Shigar ishto etzlo, so he sent his wife to him. Shaha ima shlosha yamim. So he kept her for 3 days. Kadam uba etzlo, so the master then came to the apprentice. So what's going on? Amalo, he said to him, ishti sheshigarti lecha, my wife that I sent you. Hey, honey, where is she? Amalo, Ani patartiha la altar. I sent her away immediately. Vishamati, but I heard shatinokos nisaluba, that the young men, they acted improperly with her. So he made up a story, and he said that it was, that he heard that she was behaving improperly with the young men. Baderach, on the way back. Amarlo ma'es. So the master said to the apprentice, what should I do? Amarlo, so the apprentice said to the master, Imata shomela atsasi, if you listen to my advice, girsha, you should divorce her. Amarlo, so the master said to the apprentice, ksubasa meruba, but her ksuba is very expensive, I can't afford it. Amarlo, so the apprentice said, ani alvecha, I'll lend you money. V'tein la ksubasa, and you can then afford her ksuba. Amad zevi girsha, so the master then got up and he divorced her. And of course, he borrowed the money from the apprentice. Halachu v'nasa. So the apprentice went and married her. Kivan shehigia zmano. Once the time came to pay the loan, the master now had to pay the loan. For lo hayalo leparo, he didn't have any money to pay. Amar lo, the apprentice said to the master, Bo va'asei imi bechovecha, come and work for me to pay off your debt. So you'll be my servant, and that way you'll pay off your debt. So the apprentice and the former wife of the master, who's now the wife of the apprentice, were sitting and eating, v'shosim and drinking, v'hu, and the master, the former husband, haya omed umashka aleihen, he was standing and waiting upon them. V'hayu demos noshos me'enav, and his tears were falling from his eyes, v'noflos bikosehen, and fell into their cups. V'al osa shah, and at that moment, nechtam gzar din, then the decree was sealed for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That's the story that is told at the end of the whole Gemara of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, of the second Beis HaMikdash. So it's this pasuk, the Gemara is describing the what it means to scheme and plot. You see how thought out this act was, and that he schemed and he plotted and he managed to not only get the master's money and get the master's wife, and the master has to work for him, and he's able to turn everything around and in such a terrible way. So if that happened, so that's the example the Gemara gives. Perhaps it's the most dramatic example. But that's the sort of thing that was going on. And that's what Micha means over here, that they plot and they scheme and they desire the what belongs to somebody else, and they manage to get it. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Lachain ko'amar Hashem, therefore so says Hashem, hinani choshev ala mishpacha hazos ra'a, I am considering on this family, it means the Jewish people, evil, ashalo samishu Misham Tzavro Seichem, that you will not be able to remove your necks from this punishment, meaning from the yoke of the punishment I'm going to put on you. V'lo Selchu Roma, you will not be able to go with your head held high. Ki Eis Ra'ahi, for it is a time of evil. There's going to be punishment. Bayomahu, on that day, Yisa Aleichem Mashal V'naha Nihi Nihia. There will be a mashal that a parable said about you, which involves all kinds of sorrow. Amar shadod nishadunu. You'll say that the enemy has taken us captive. Chelek ami yamir. The portion of my nation will be exchanged. In other words, the enemy will take over your portion, will take over your land. Eich yamishli. L'shovev sadenu yichalek. How, you'll say, how can I get out of this problem that my field will now be divided up to the one who has taken me captive? How can I possibly stop that? So that the land will be taken away by the enemy. L'chein lo yeh lecha mashlich chevel bigorol b'kal Hashem. Therefore there will not be amongst you those who are able to divide up land amongst the Kal Hashem. Usually when there's an inheritance, the land gets divided up. But there won't be any inheritance of land to divide up. No one will have that opportunity because the land will be taken away. Al tatifu yatifun. Do not say prophecy. Hashem tells the prophets, don't say prophecy. Lo yatifu la'ele, lo yisag klimos. Do not prophesy for these people, because they're not going to listen anyway. They're not going to pay attention. And lo yisag klimos, so that you prophets, don't attain shame. Meaning, if you say prophecy for these people, they're going to shame you. They're going to degrade you and make fun of you. So don't say prophecy for them so that you don't end up being ashamed and degraded. The Gemara tells us, Gadol Chacham Minavi, that a sage, a Torah scholar, is greater than a Navi. So what does that mean? First, many of the Nevi'im were Torah scholars. Most of them were Torah scholars. But what it means to say is that the scholarship of the Torah scholar is greater than the prophecy. Because Hashem tells the prophets, don't bother. Since they're going to shame you and they're going to degrade you, there's no point in saying prophecy to them. They're not going to listen anyway. But to the Chacham, to the Torah scholar, Hashem does not tell the Torah scholar to desist from trying to teach and guide the nation. And so therefore, this, the Medrash says, is an example of Gadol Chacham Minavi, that in certain ways, the Chacham, the Torah scholar, is greater than the Navi. Now, as I said, it's hard to separate those two things. Moshe Rabbeinu, who of course was our teacher who gave us the Torah, is Rabban Shel Kol HaNaviim. He's the greatest prophet to ever live. They go together. His scholarship and his prophecy go together. But the point that the Medrash is making is that in certain ways that scholarship outweighs the prophecy. Pasuk Zayin, Ha'amor Beis Yaakov, that it is said, this is what Beis Yaakov says, Hakatsar Ruach Hashem, is the spirit of Hashem, has it come up short? Im Eila Mala Love, is this the way of his actions? Meaning, is this the way Hashem does things, that he doesn't take care of me? Has he come up short? Normally Hashem takes care of me. Now he's not taking care of me. So therefore, the house of Yaakov will say, has Hashem come up short? He's not taking care of me. So Hashem responds, Halo dvara yetivu, that my words would be good for them, im hayashar holeich, if they would only go on the straight path. The reason why it's not happening the way they are expecting it is because they're not behaving properly. Ve'esmul ami le'oyev yekomeim. And yesterday, my nation, they establish the enemy. They bring up the enemy. They want the enemy to be, the enemy here means the averos. They support the enemy. Mimul salma eder tafshitun. It's because of the fact that they are taking clothing away from people, meaning they're stealing the shirt off their back. They're stealing clothing from the people. May ovrim betach, from those who are passing by with confidence, shuve milchama, they turn into those who are returning from losing a war. When a person returns from battle, if they lost the war, and they come back having run away from the war, they often come back with tattered clothing, with no supplies. They look like they don't have anything, because they don't. They've escaped the war. So people who are otherwise traveling with confidence, these people scheme and plot to literally take the shirt off their back. And they look like they've come back from a war with nothing, from more than they lost. Imagine a person traveling in an expensive vehicle with luggage and all the amenities that they need, and then they're held up on the road, and the thieves take everything, and they have nothing left. They have no wallet, they have no car, they have no luggage, they have no supplies, and then they are forced to now walk back, and they have a long walk. They get back with tattered clothing, with worn out shoes, and they look like they've gone through absolutely nothing. That's the analogy over here. Pasuk Tes, Neshei Ami Tigarshun Mibeis Ta'anugeha, the wives of my nation you will have chased away from the house of her, of where she is settled, where she is, has, where it's pleasant for her. So they will affect the wives of the people. Me'al Olaleha, from upon her children, Tikhu hadari la'olam. You will take my grandeur forever, which means you'll take away their support, their money. So there's a couple of different ways the Medrash deals with this pasuk. It could be just saying that they steal the money from the men and take away their livelihood and take away their businesses so that the wives end up with nothing, so that they have no grandeur, they have no, it's like they are sent away with nothing because their husbands have no way of supporting them. The other more direct approach is they cause the wives to be divorced because they act in a promiscuous manner with the wives that forces the husbands to divorce the wives, and the wives end up without their husbands and therefore without the means of support that they need, and the grandeur is lost. So the next pasuk says, Kumu ulechu, get up and go, ki lo zos ha-menucha, because this is not the rest or the this is not the, what's a good word for that? Menucha here means
being, place of rest.
Yeah, it means being settled in the land. This is not what I meant, says Hashem, when I settled you in the land. This is not what this is not what I envisioned for you. Therefore, you need to get up and go and leave the land. Bavur tama, because of making the land impure, techabel, you will, well, there are different ways of translating the word techabel also. Rashi says you'll be joined together in evil. Chavala is also a wound or being hit or being hurt. So the chevel nimrats means clear or obvious. So it could mean also a wound or a pain that is obvious or strong. The Medrash says that of all of the averos that cause Hashem to react to bring about galus, so this is the one that hastens it, which is creating, acting promiscuously with the wives of others, bringing about mamzerim, bringing about illegitimate children, and that causes the sending into galus and the tuma of the land. Lu ish holech ruach vasheker kizev. This is what the people are saying. They're saying, would there be a man, they're looking for a man, who goes with a spirit that is false. They're looking for false prophets. Atif lecha layayin v'la sheichar, that will prophesy for you wine and, another word for that which inebriates. They're looking for those who will prophesy and permit all kinds of pleasures. V'haya matif ha-mazeh, and he will say prophecy for this nation. They're looking for someone who will prophesy falsely for them and permit all the things that they're trying to do. So, all of this is all of the negative, and the galus that comes with it and all the terrible things that come with it. But here, so here the Navi ends this perek with turning it around. Asof esof Yaakov kulach. There will come a time when I will gather together, Yaakov, all of you. Kabetz akabetz sheris Yisrael. I will gather up the remnant of Yisrael. Yachan asimenu. I will put them together. Kitzon batzra. Like the sheep of the corral. Ke'eder besoch hadavro, like the flock in its, another word for corral, tehimena me'adam, there will be a whole bunch of people, a lot of people, there'll be hamon, a lot of people together. Allah haporeitz lifnehem, the porates, the one who breaks through the fences, will go up before them. Partsu vayavoru, they will break forth and they will pass. Shar vayetsuvo, the gate, and they will go out through the gate. this is a reference to breaking out of galus. Vayavar malkam lifnehem, and their king will pass before them. Vahashem birosham, and Hashem will be at their head. So the Navi ends by saying that this, at least this part of it, the Navi ends by saying that although there's going to be all of this bad that is going on, but in the end, their galus will, Hashem will gather together all the remnants of the Jewish people, and there will be then a lot of Jews that will develop, and that they will break forth out of galus with Hashem and with their king in front of them and Hashem at their head. The Medrash says here, which you might have noticed in Pasuk Yud Beis in verse 12, that the Jews are going to gather together and then be redeemed. This is a reference to that Geula happens after everybody is together, not when the Jews are all fragmented. Thank you. Right. It's a common thing. People say it all the time that there has to be unity in order for there to be geula. It's an easy thing to say. Describing how that's supposed to happen is very, very difficult to do. But it is true that there needs to be achdus and togetherness in order to bring about the geula. The reference here to breaking forth, there are a whole bunch of midrashim about this pasuk, this last pasuk in Perek Beis. Virtually every time the Torah uses the verb paratz, to break forth, the Medrash references this pasuk. There's a lot of discussion on the son of Yehuda and Tamar, Peretz. Ma paratz dalecha paratz. That Peretz was named Peretz, the son of Yehuda and Tamar, because there were twins who were being born, and the Zerach, who was the second child to be born, put his hand out first. And the midwife tied a ribbon on his hand to say, Zeyat Sari Shana, this one came out first, so they knew who was the Bechor. But then the Zerach pulled his hand back, and Peretz preceded Zerach into this world, and she said, Ma paratz ta alecha paratz, that you have broken forth. You were supposed to be second, and you broke forth and came out first. And therefore his name was Peretz. So, David HaMelech comes not from Zerach, but from Peretz. Ben Partzi, as we say in Lecha Dodi. So, he's from Peretz. In Rus, at the end of Rus, when the lineage of David HaMelech is recounted, the 10 generations from Yehuda till David, it says, Ve'ele toldos Peretz. That it goes from Peretz, it's really 10 generations of Peretz, down to David. So, for instance, Nachshon ben Aminadav is from Peretz. Peretz is where the line of David HaMelech comes from. And Mashiach, who we're waiting for, Mashiach ben David, will come from Peretz. So you see that in the very origin of the seeds of Mashiach with David HaMelech's line, it begins with a man named Peretz, because in his very birth, he burst forth where he wouldn't have expected that to happen. So the pasuk here is telling us that is a siman, that is a sign for the future, that when Mashiach comes, it's going to be in a method of pirtza, that there's going to be a bursting forth that will occur. You have the same verb with that Hashem says, Ufaratzta yama vakeva vitzafona vanegba. You'll burst forth in all directions. So that is a similar idea. Now, we know that what's the word for immodesty? Pritzus is the word for immodesty. Where that, because paratz or pirtza means that which is normally closed up or covered up is now open or uncovered. That's what pirtza means. So the Gemara has a phrase, this is not a pasuk, this is an idiom in the Gemara, pirtza kore laganav. A hole in the fence, calls to a thief. If there's a pirtza, where there should be a fence or there should be a wall and there's a breach in the wall, then, or in the fence, then that's gonna invite a thief. That's what happens. So a pirtza could be a bad thing. And when we use the term pritzus, we typically mean it in a negative way, that it's a pritzus is an immodest act or immodest behavior. And we also find pirtza in a positive way. And that's the way it's used here, that there is a bursting forth which implies an unexpected bursting forth or with more strength and power that one would have expected. And in the time of Mashiach, the way that it's going to happen is that Mashiach ben David will burst forth with the people in a manner that is unexpected, with strength that nobody knew they had. Maybe even they or we didn't know we had. That it will be special, extra strength from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that will propel Mashiach and the people forward out of Golus. That's what's going to happen. Now, we've talked about this before, that the line of David HaMelech, the lineage of David HaMelech, is the most significant lineage in the history of the world. That there's nothing more important in terms of lineage than the line of David HaMelech. Because ultimately, we need Mashiach to appear, and Mashiach comes from the line of David HaMelech. We've mentioned before that Adam HaRishon himself, Adam, which is spelled Aleph Dalid Mem, that the Aleph Dalid Mem is an acronym, Rashi Tevos, for Aleph is Adam, Dalid is David, and Mem is Mashiach. Because that's the most significant line. You go from Adam HaRishon to David HaMelech. Remember that Adam HaRishon was supposed to live 1,000 years, and he only lived 930 years. He gave 70 years of his life to David HaMelech. And you go from Adam to David to Mashiach. A Mashiach represents the time and the generation and the person who will lead that generation back to the way it was supposed to be. Adam HaRishon Kodem HaChet, to get the world back to the way it was supposed to be before that sin of Adam and Chava. And then even beyond that, to where Adam and Chava would have gotten had they not sinned. And bringing the world to its shlemus, to its fruition, and its closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That line is constantly beset by, I guess the best word to use in our vernacular is scandals. That line constantly has questionable relationships that we would describe today as scandals. You have Lot and his daughters, which is in this week's Parsha, in Parsha's Vayera. We have Yehuda and Tamar. You have Boaz and Rus. You have David and Bathsheba. You have all kinds of questionable relationships, which either the Gemara says are not a sin or they are a sin, but they're not what you think they are. And, you know, that kind of thing. But it's a constant thing. Why is this particular line constantly beset by that particular, accusation of Avera? It's because a lineage, for it to be authentic, requires that the relationships that take place in that line between men and women is appropriate. Otherwise, it's not going to be an authentic line. The way lines become non-authentic is when these, when there's promiscuity going on and things aren't done properly. That's how things get, people get mixed in that shouldn't be there. So this line, because it is the most important lineage in the entire history of the world, therefore it is the line that is most threatened by promiscuity, by inappropriate behavior. And it is always that which is that struggle to keep this line pure is a constant struggle. So therefore, pirtza, pritzus, or immodesty and immorality is a constant threat for the line of David HaMelech. On the other hand, the way that the line is meant to show itself is through pirtza, in a good way, as we learn here, and from Peretz himself. That's the way it's supposed to show itself. That's the way it's going to be in the end. And it is through this line of David HaMelech being careful with pirtza in the negative sense that they're able to turn it on its head and have pirtza in the positive sense and to burst forth with strength that no one knew they had and with ability that no one knew was possible. And there, as you find, when Peretz bursts forth, that is where there is a sudden appearance of power and greatness that will take us out of Golus. So it's two sides of the same coin, where the typically we say Hatznei Alecha Sim Elokecha, that a person needs to go with humility and with
modesty.
Modesty, right? Thank you. With modesty, and not with pirtza, but there are times when pirtza is appropriate, and when the Mashiach comes, there's going to be a pirtza. There's going to be a sudden bursting forth. It's not going to be quiet. It's not going to be like, you know, sneaking around. It's going to be a shofar blow, and it's going to be like, it's going to be public. And that is a positive pirtza. What makes it positive? Because it is to bring about kvod shamayim, it is to bring about Hashem's honor, and to bring about the time that the world will become aware of Hashem. So that is all in the positive sense. So Peretz's birth symbolizes both sides of the coin, that this line will struggle with pirtza, but also will end up using pirtza in a positive manner in the service of Hashem.
Why did it have to be that way? Why couldn't it be just, why did it, you're saying, so you said before scandalous, then you had relationships or whatever that seemed to be, looked like they were scandalous. So, but why do you need to have that, to have the pirtza?
It seems that in order to be zoche to the proper use of pirtza, this line has to, bedavka, be
looking like not.
No, they have to be dafka master not to use pirtza improperly. So they're going to be challenged in the area of pirtza more than anybody else.
So let's say you started with Lot and his daughters.
So being challenged in the area of pirtza means, how are they challenged in the area of pirtza? So the most obvious way that we're used to is, you know, we're bombarded by immorality all over the world, right? That's an obvious way of being. But another way of being challenged in this area is that one is faced with a very, very subtle choice where it could be okay and not okay, and it's a very, very fine line between what's right and what's wrong. So with Lot and his daughters, you find this, you really find it you find it projected in a really powerful way. Lot and his daughters in this week's parsha, you find Chazal at the same time are, they praise what happened and they criticize what happened at the same time. In that story, the daughters really believed that there was no one left but themselves and Lot. They probably knew that Avram and Sarah were alive, but Avram and Sarah weren't having children. So there was no one left to have children but them and their father. And therefore, they decided that it was appropriate, it was a mitzvah, to have a relationship with their father. And they were correct, meaning they had the wrong information, but based on what they believed, they were correct. They reasoned that since we find a precedent for this in that, that Cain had to marry his own sister because there was nothing else after Adam and Chava's children had to marry each other. There was no one else to marry. So you see that when there is no choice, if the world will cease to exist without incest, then incest is a mitzvah. So therefore they reasoned in this case as well, incest is a mitzvah. And therefore they had a relationship with their father. Rav Moshe Feinstein explains that why'd they get him drunk? Why not just, I mean, he also should have agreed with them that there's nobody left, and therefore we have to create children. So why didn't they just talk to him about it? So Rav Moshe Feinstein explains because it would have been physically impossible for him to have a relationship with them because they were his daughters. Mm-hmm. And therefore they needed to get him drunk to the point where he didn't know what was going on. And kishichruso shalot, to get him so drunk he has no idea what's going on. That's what he explains. So in that way they are praised for what they did. And the older daughter who was with her father the first night, so she merited that her descendant, which is Rus, joins the Jewish people four generations prior to the descendant of her sister, which is Naama. Naama joins the Jewish people four generations after Rus. So that's because the older sister was the one who seized the mitzvah first. And for that one night, she gets four generations earlier into the Jewish people, which is an incredible thing. So again, that's a lot of praise for what they did. At the same time, Lot is criticized because Lot, although he didn't know what was happening the first night, he got drunk, but he didn't know what was happening, but he did know when he woke up in the morning what had happened. And nevertheless, he drank the second night knowing that he would get to the point where he didn't know what was going on and it would happen all over again, but he didn't stop it the second night, he should have. So he's criticized for that. The older sister, who we just said is praised for having seized the mitzvah first, nevertheless, she is also criticized for naming her son Moav, which means from father, that she was open about it, which is considered to be a pritzus. It's considered to be an immodest thing to do. She was saying this was the right thing to do. So if it's the right thing to do, and name the child for, because the child, naming the child for the mitzvah. This was a mitzvah. But she's criticized because it's one thing to do it because you believe it's a mitzvah, which is fine, but not to publicize it. It's not something you wear on your sleeve. So, and the younger sister is rewarded for naming her child Ben Ami or Amon, right? So it's not clear that it's from her father. So she's rewarded. Later on in history, when the Jews are going into Eretz Yisrael, they are commanded not to wage war with Moab or with Amon, but with Amon, they're not allowed to do anything to Amon. With Moab, they're not allowed to wage war, but they are allowed to raid them and hurt them and like that. They are allowed to push them around. So that's because of this. So within the same act that is praised, but it's also criticized because it's a very, very fine line. To do this 100% right would have it would have taken a lot of subtlety. Yes, the daughter should have done it. No, she should not have been named her son Moab. And there's a lot of subtlety there. Lot, he shouldn't have allowed it the second night. There's a lot of subtlety over there in how it's going to be done properly. You find the same thing with Yehuda and Tamar, where there is praise and there's also criticism. And with Boaz and Rus, there's praise and there's also an element of criticism. You find it throughout because these things are so subtle. To get it right is very, very difficult. Even David HaMelech with Bathsheba, who in the end, it's considered an Avera, what he did, where the other ones were not considered an Avera. The other ones are considered the right thing with some elements that could have been done better. With David HaMelech, it's considered an Avera, but even there, the Gemara is very clear that he was supposed to eventually marry Bathsheba. He got the right woman. It's just that he was too quick in taking her. But it was correct. The Gemara says that Bathsheba was designated for David HaMelech, Misheshes and Mebreshes, that she was supposed to be the mother of Mashiach, which she is. So it's still called an Avera because of the way it was done. So I'm saying there's a lot of subtlety in these relationships, and that's because of the concept of Pirtza, where the line of Mashiach has to deal with this challenge, and they have to master this challenge, and then to use it in a proper manner.
And so, down the road, also we have to look forward to this.
We're not Nevi'im. It would not shock me if, when Mashiach finally does appear, there will be questions about his lineage, about his legitimacy. That there will be questions swirling around, because that's the history of the line of David HaMelech. I'm not predicting anything. I'm saying it wouldn't shock me based on what we see throughout the history of the line of David HaMelech.
When David HaMelech, his lineage was questioned.
Yeah, that's an obscure medrash.
Yeah,
that's not a mainstream medrash about David HaMelech and his father, Yishai and his father. That's a very obscure medrash.
They thought the mother was.
But again, that's an obscure medrash.
Well, we also learned that whoever the David sin is Kolomer David Chatai.
Because it doesn't mean what it says. The Navi says that he did the Avera of adultery. She did not do the Avera of adultery. But what he did on his level is akin to adultery for a regular person. It was something which had elements of that. So he's held responsible for something along those lines.
What does it really mean that, you know, you said this is so, so basic. Aleph, Dalet, Mem, the most important, the most significant lineage in everything, and it has to be scandalous. What does it mean? Like, what is that? What's the message for us?
I mean, any time you have something that is important, it's going to be challenged. You can't have greatness in something that's easy.
Well, let's say Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, you know, those that look pretty kosher. I mean, they each had, Abraham had Ishmael, Yitzchak had Esau.
Sarah was taken twice.
Yes, but there was question.
The Gemara says in Parsha, the Midrash says in Parsha, told us, Rashi brings it.
He looked like Yitzchak, Abraham, Hashem, that he was.
Because the Leitzanei Hador, the scorners, those who mocked, said that Sarah became pregnant from Avimelech. It wasn't so simple, the whole thing. And Yaakov with Rachel and Leah, I mean, it wasn't simple at all. Love and switch them, I mean, you know.
So that's the way it has to be.
I don't know if that's the way it has to be. Because they were starting a nation, and they were starting not just a nation, they were starting Klal Yisrael, it wasn't going to be simple. Avram and Sarah had to wait till they were 100 for him, 90 for her to have a child, to have Yitzchak. It wasn't going to be easy. If it was easy, then it wouldn't be good. It wouldn't be important. Anything important is going to be hard. Anything, think about it. Anything difficult, anything that's significant and important is difficult.
So if things come easy, we should be worried. No, I'm saying, like, right? That's what, in the mice, that's really what you're saying.
It has less, it has less value. It's not valueless. It just has less value.
I see it more that it's a Messiah. Hashem is testing them.
Yeah.
To see if they're going to rise to that, to rise to that greatness, to be worthy to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true. But it's because this is the area that they need to excel in. Right.
So we learned this in high school. And they use a term called Shochad L'Satan.
Yeah, that's like another way of saying it.
It's the same thing.
It's the same idea. It's the same idea. It's the same idea. As a bribe to the Satan.
Oh.
The Satan is charged with undermining. The Satan's job is to try to keep people from doing the right thing. That's the Satan's job. It's really his job. It's L'shem, the Gemara says it's L'shem Shamayim Niskaven. His job is to make it difficult so that we get reward. The more important or the greater something is, the Satan's gonna work overtime. That's his job. So in this area, he's working overtime to undermine the line of David HaMelech. It's the same idea.
So when we have scandalous things, we should really think that, okay, this is really chashuv. I'm not really making fun. I'm really just trying to think. Because
people can act in a scandalous manner, and it's purely evil. Yeah, right. And people could do that. That's
really.
I'm saying, and that's not necessarily because they were significantly challenged in that area. They're just doing bad things. But so scandals are bad. We don't want to encourage scandals. In the line of David HaMelech, it seems that there is a particular job of the Satan to make things difficult in that area.
Okay.
We'll see. Mitzvah Hashem, we will all know.
Right, we'll see. Also, that way, if there's questions, then maybe this is right. You know?
Could be. But, you know, we got to take things as we see them. We can't just, you know.
So. Is there any description or commentary of Micha, he writes very poetic in the sense, a lot of double.
Yeah. So we talked about last week. So listen to it. Okay. We talked all about Micha's poetic flair.
Yeah. I don't remember seeing that, this term. It sounds like tutafos. That's
your nevuah. Yatifun. It could mean. I'm not sure. We have it in Yechezkel, the word comes up also.
What word did you say? We had it many times about being saying nevuah, and it sounded to me like to the post, you know, like in Shema.
Yeah.
And so, but it's not.
It could mean to talk. It could mean to talk. Rashi says in Maseches Menachos that when you see the tefillin, you talk about the Yetzias Mitzrayim.
So like
Nev
is talking.
Right.
Like Nev is speak, right?
Yeah, Nev is, right. Nev's for same.
Mm-hmm.